I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver. This is the commentary.ca. It's Monday afternoon, and the political commentator and analyst, Alex Sakoumis, joins me again. His popular website at alexgsakoumis.com has been discussing the resignation of Gordon Campbell. We'll talk about that, the race now on who succeeds him, and other political matters. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Alex Sakoumis. Good afternoon, Mr. Sakoumis.
Great to be with you again.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So you have this the story on your website, the real story on what happened and what necessitated the resignation of Gordon Campbell last Wednesday.
Correct.
Yeah. When people say that it was to spend more time with his family and all that, that's not true?
Hogwash.
Yeah.
Couldn't possibly be more hogwash. It wasn't about going down and cradling his grandson in the sands in L.A. and, you know, talking to his son and then waiting for his wife to come back from Nepal, or I believe that's where she was. He very simply was scared. He had heard of the group of 11 that were forming to challenge him. And not really challenge him. I mean, I spoke to a few of them, and they were abundantly clear. They weren't interested in insulting the premier or really putting him on the spot, per se. What they were interested in doing was to have him understand that he's overstayed his welcome. Now, it could be argued that they should have done that a long time ago, and I would be one of the people arguing that. However, I suppose it's never too late, although in this case it may be. And they were going to approach him. In fact, one of them had contacted some of the premier's henchmen in the party and in his office and said, look, this just isn't cutting it for us, and we would really appreciate it if we could speak to the premier. In fact, it was made abundantly clear to the premier by another member of caucus that this group of 11 was the real thing, and it consisted of two cabinet ministers at least, Randy Hawes and Bill Bennett, and that if he wasn't prepared to announce that he was stepping aside, and this announcement needed to be made on an immediate basis, that they would, some of them, were fully prepared to sit as independents. And that's not something that the premier could have survived.
What do you think emboldened these 11 caucus members? Because heretofore, he's had a pretty iron grip on them, on the party and on cabinet, right?
Bill Bennett.
Yeah.
Bill Bennett's conversation with him after the or just before the cabinet shuffle. That is what emboldened them. When Bennett had the conversation with the premier that said, you know, you've ripped out licensing and permits and whatnot, and shattered a good part of my portfolio, I don't know why you would do that without consulting. Even if there was a case for it, you didn't even bother to ask. You've done similarly with other cabinet ministers, don't you care? And from what I'm told by sources who spoke directly to the premier, he was pretty shocked. And of course, you know, he would be. He's never let a minister polish his or her own apple. He doesn't really care about other people's opinions. His autocratic, iron rule, iron-fisted grip on the party was just enough. And, you know, I guess Bennett got tired of it. And there were other cabinet ministers who've also spoken strongly about, you know, this sort of autocratic rule that the premier enjoys, and Bennett told him off, and it was a very unpleasant discussion, and apparently it spooked the premier, and he started calling cabinet members and saying, well, you know, what's your opinion of this, and what's your opinion of that, and I don't want you to be put off. And so he called Bennett back the next day and said, you know, I've thought about it, and I think I'm going to give you the pieces to your ministry back. And Bennett said, I don't want them. I simply want you to act democratically. And they had another discussion, because apparently the same source tells me that Bennett had told him months earlier that he thought he should go. In fact, Bennett had advised him to leave announced that he was leaving at the caucus retreat in Harrison, to which Campbell ignored the advice. So I think it was a combination of things, but the fact that caucus was emboldened didn't happen spontaneously. It was over a course of weeks, and it started with that conversation the Premier had with Bennett.
So what happens now? It doesn't seem like are they in better shape without Gordon Campbell there?
I suppose when you're starting from zero, I really don't see how they're going to survive. They were all there at the time that the premier was doing the things that are so utterly unpalatable to the electorate. So I don't know how they're going to say, well, you know, we never really supported the HST. We never really supported the carbon tax. We never really supported with a plan to essentially give Native Aboriginals anything they want. We never really supported the plan to slash arts funding. We never supported the plan to gut community service programs for the elderly. You know, they were all there for that. Every single last one of them. Including Bennett, including Hawes, including any of the others who have now all of a sudden had an epiphany. So I don't know how they're going to get around it. The public's pretty angry. I think they want to spank anyone who was there. I mean, save and except for getting rid of almost every single member of caucus and replacing them with new people and then installing someone like Diane Watts, I just don't know how they can save that party. Plus, they're $8 million in debt. I broke that story some time ago. And to run a provincial election, you need between $5 and $5.5 million. So, you know, that means in the next 2.5 years, someone has got to be leadership gold enough to go out and raise between $13 and $14 million so that you've got enough to pay off the debt, enough to run an election, and enough to use as a bit of a buffer. So I don't know how the hell they're going to do that. That's just I think it's an exercise in futility.
What happens now to the HST referendum?
Well, that's a very good question. What does happen? It's hard to say at this point. I think they're going to get spanked. I think rather than to do an HST referendum and waste money on that, they're better off and spending that money on a full public inquiry on Bassey-Virk. I think they should roll back the HST on low-income earners. I think they should roll back the HST on middle-income earners below a certain level. I think they should offer up significant incentives to the restaurant industry, who are significantly hampered by the HST. I mean, it's clear they're now backtracking. I hear today that the Solicitor General, Rich Coleman, is now considering axing these new draconian drunk driving rules, where you can't go have a meal with your wife and have a beer. I mean, it's ridiculous. For some people, I'm fortunate. I'm a lot heavier than most people, so I can survive a couple of drinks and not be impaired. But I just think it's the silly season. You know, they made so many mistakes socially that they decided to put in these rules as a government and try to, you know, sort of hoodwink the people of the province into thinking that they really care, and they don't. So it's hard to say what will happen with the HST. I don't know. If it were me and I were Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister, I would have looked at the 700,000 plus people who signed that petition. I would have picked up the phone and called Gordon Campbell and said, look, those people aren't just your electors. They're mine, too. It's not just your electorate. It's my electorate, too. I genuinely give a damn about what they think, and I think they don't want the HST. Why don't we give you 10 years to pay back the 1.6, and we just call it a draw? That would have been huge political horses for the Prime Minister. And the fact that the Premier didn't have to necessarily look like he was being dragged kicking and screaming would have been a hell of a lot better than sitting around and calling David Bassey and Bobby Virk criminals when they clearly copped pleas under false pretenses. Someone cut a deal with them. And, jumping up and down like a banshee and saying that they're criminals. Okay, Premier, great, they're criminals. Why are you doing business with them?
Yeah. And so you've got the two contenders, for it, Abbott and Falcon. They've emerged as the front runners, have they, in this race so far?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They're the ones with the two biggest books. They're the ones who could probably get coalitions formed at convention. Abbott's been organizing the longest. He's actually got somebody out there that's been raising money for him as well. Falcon has the full power of the federal conservatives behind him, although he's going to have a tough time if James Moore, and I heard this morning from friends in Ottawa that James Moore is thinking of running for the leadership. If that happens, then they're going to have a very difficult time.
You mentioned Diane Watts earlier. I mean, is she a possibility?
Yes, she is. She's thinking about it.
Yeah.
I talked to her over the weekend, and she said that she's thinking about it. But I'm not sure what she's thinking about specifically with respect to what party she would run for. I got the impression from speaking to her that a new vehicle was not out of the question, but that she feels very strongly that the current caucus and current cabinet should be accountable. She's a very rare politician, the anti-politician. She actually believes that public servants should be held accountable, not just at election time, but through their term. I've never, ever heard in 25 years a politician actually say that. It's pretty rare.
Yeah. Other than Watts and James Moore now, as you've just said, is there anyone else that could possibly throw their hat in the ring?
I doubt it. I mean, it's entirely possible. There might be other people out there, but other than Watts and Moore, I can't see anybody else from outside. Furlong won't do it. That's never been part of the plan. Christy Clark would love to do it.
Yeah.
Her long-term goal, of course, is to go back to public life. I mean, that's clear from talking to anybody who has anything to do with her. But she just signed a long-term contract with CKNW, so I don't know. Can she get out of it? I have no idea.
You worked for Vanderzem for a time, right?
I did. I was a political advisor to him. I didn't work in his office, but I was charged with the task of trying to give him good political advice.
Yeah. What do you make of what his role in all of this is?
Well, it's been, way overplayed. I think Bill just genuinely doesn't like taxes on people at a very bad time, during the world economic rumpus and a down economy in this country. I think the HST was a dumb move, and I think he did, and I think he got involved. But, the notion that somehow he's delivering the NDP to the door, I mean, for Gordon Campbell to be as shameless as saying something like that is just beyond belief. Bill had nothing to do with that. I think he's doing his thing.
Now, you mentioned Diane Watts and possibly using a third party, a third party as a vehicle. That asks the question, what's the state of the NDP in all of this?
Well, I mean, I want to stress, Diane Watts didn't say that to me specifically.
Yeah.
I got the impression that she felt that the Liberals needed to be entirely accountable. I don't know how you can be that and still run under that banner, but, she's smarter than I am, so I will defer to her on that. But the NDP are badly divided. Doesn't matter whether Carol stays or not. She's openly admitted that her caucus are divided over her leadership. I think that she she's going to have a very difficult time. I like John Horgan. I think the world of him. I think he's been a very good energy critic. I think he's very capable. I think Adrian Dix is capable. I like Mike Farnworth. I don't like the NDP, but I think all those guys are perfectly capable of replacing her. I hear Bill Thielman's name a lot. You know, I've had my differences with Bill, but I think he genuinely cares about people. I think he's too tied to the unions. I think he's too left-wing. Hard to say. I really believe that they're going to be badly divided. And, you know, the biggest problem they've got is Mo Sohoda. How the hell they could have possibly elected that clown as president of their party is absolutely just beyond comprehension. I have no idea why they would go back and take a tarnished star like that, a minister that was embroiled in scandal, and retread him and bring him back like that. I mean, he's the greatest gift to any center-right party. I mean, and you know, his ham-fistedness inside the party doesn't help either. And if you think he doesn't think that he's a leader or leadership contender, let me tell you, on, I can't remember the exact date, but somewhere in the middle or end of November, middle to late November, there's a huge party at a banquet hall, Indo-Canadian banquet hall in Surrey, to celebrate Mo Sohoda's 25 years in politics. I mean, it's just unbelievable. What are they going to do? Are they going to put up videos of all of his scandals and the fact that he was booted by the Law Society for a while? I mean, I just don't get it. So, you know, the NDP have got their own problems, and they seem to have really tapped out at about 38%, 40%. The only way they win is if the center-right vote is divided, and that's what would worry me about a third option. But, you know, if the Liberals can't run and the BC Conservatives are as consumed by far-right religious nutbars as they are today, then, you know, that third vehicle might work. But specifically in terms of the NDP, since that was your question, I think they're badly divided, and there's a huge opportunity for a center-right party that's cohesive and has a comprehensive plan and deals with the HST and brings in some new faces and does the right things, not just saying, you know, doing a mea culpa. That's not enough. You've got to really mean it. You've got to show the public that you're prepared to do it. And so what? If you go into a few billion dollars worth of debt, oh well. You know, I think the public's prepared for that.
So how's this, Alex? Me, you, and Bud Smith, we'll go to the Mo Sohoda dinner later this month, okay?
Okay. Hey, I'm happy to go. Mo Sohoda and I went to St. George's together, and he was some years ahead of me, but when he came back to speak one time, while he was a young NDP hierarch, he was invited to give a keynote address to the alumni, and I and a former classmate of mine stood up and handed him a jockstrap and told him that was the only support he had in the room.
Alex, it's good to talk again. Thanks for this.
Always a pleasure.
The website for more is alexgsakumas.com. That's where you can read the blog. Alex Sakumas on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.